Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And off we go. Hour number three of the radio broadcast begins right now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the Great Milonzo with you, and a busy next hour and a half in the very next segment. Abe Gordon from 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia, is set to join us to talk about the rise and fall of the 2024 Atlanta Braves. Then Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast will join us. We'll talk some Carolina Panthers as they get set. They've been in the news a little bit. The thought that potentially Deontay Johnson could be a target for a trade with the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll address that. Then, 9 o'clock, Hayton Ask Mario from the BetQL Network will join us. We'll talk to Mario about all the biggest stories in the National Football League and set you up for week 5 in the NFL. Then at 9:20, Fight Club with the Great Milonzo, where we'll talk boxing, MMA, and pro wrestling, including making our picks for Bad Blood this weekend. And then we wrap the show up with your calls. But we lead off this hour with a guest that I am glad to have back in the fold. Didn't talk to her last week. Well, that's because I was down in St. Augustine, Florida. I was busy. I took some time. Whatever. I deserved it. So did Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News, who joins us now on the show to talk some South Carolina Gamecock football. Lulu, good morning. Thanks for coming on. Sorry it was short notice. I was going to get back to you last night, but we haven't had power in a week, and I'm over it.
No worries. Good morning. You have every excuse. I'm so sorry about the power situation, and don't worry about it.
Lulu, there's a difference between excuses and reasons. I have said this on our show many times. Reasons are when something outside of your control prevents you from success. Excuses are when something within your control that you fail to do prevents you from success. Not having power for a week is a damn good reason to be a grumpy person.
Totally. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the saying, it's not an excuse, it's an explanation.
I like that a lot. Consider it adopted. Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. She covers the Gamecock Athletic Department for the Greenville News. All right, let's get into it, Lulu. First and foremost, as we get set for the Ole Miss running Rebels coming to town, you've heard the expression, the 24-hour rule, right? You can be happy about a victory for 24 hours. You can be upset about a loss for 24 hours. LSU's been in the back pocket for coming up on 2 weeks. At this point, I know it's a sore subject. I know it's one that USC would love to have another run at. But has this team grown mentally? Do you think that you are going to see a more mentally headstrong team after the loss to LSU that comes out this Saturday against Ole Miss?
I think so. It's a little bit tricky because of the open date. And obviously not playing last week, there was nothing to kind of go off of them. And then the week 4 win was kind of a blowout. So I do think that this team has learned from LSU, but at the same time, for me personally, that's kind of where I'm judging most right now, is how have they learned from the LSU loss and how much will kind of those self-inflicted errors and penalties, like, is that negative pattern going to continue? Because I think that should have been one of the biggest takeaways from the LSU loss, regardless how they viewed the penalties, whether they thought they were fair or not, they were still called. And I think that there were a ton of penalties in that game that South Carolina deserved to be called for. So I think going forward, sort of my point of emphasis and sort of view of this team right now is, like, are they mentally strong enough to play another close game when they're the underdog? Because it's weird, like, Kentucky, they were the underdog going into it, but then they weren't ever really, like, it wasn't ever really a close game. Like, South Carolina just stepped on the gas. So it's sort of like LSU was their last sort of really competitive close game, and it kind of felt like South Carolina fell apart when things got tough. So I think regardless of who they're playing this month, obviously they have three SEC games in a row, but it's sort of like, okay, can they handle if people don't think they can win and then they're in a situation to win, how do they maturely kind of get themselves to the other side, unlike they did against LSU?
I love it. And I love that answer, Lulu. Discipline, I think, is going to be big in this game. When you have an offense like Ole Miss that loves to air it out, they've got a lot of different complex passing strategies that they bring at you. They're going to run a lot of guys a lot of different places. This is a team, I think, at Ole Miss that relies on you making mistakes. It relies on guys being out of position. It relies on guys missing assignments, etc. This game, to me, feels like if South Carolina is going to pull the upset in this one, and it will be an upset, a 9.5-point dog coming in, if they pull an upset, it's going to have to rely specifically on defense, on being disciplined, on being in the right place at the right time. I know this game's going to be emotional, both from the standpoint of getting an SEC win after the SEC loss and having Juice Wells on the other side, which we'll talk about here in just a minute from now. But to me, it feels like this might be the most important game, at least so far, of Shane Beamer's tenure, of being disciplined, being in the right spot at the right time, and making sure you're not making those mistakes, because this game, maybe more than LSU, this is where this game could be lost in what I really think, despite being a 9.5-point dog, is a winnable game for USC.
I agree with that entirely, and I think the biggest thing is how South Carolina approaches Ole Miss's success. That kind of goes off to what I was saying beforehand, but I sort of told Shane I wanted to pick his brain a little bit in the press conference earlier this week, because I do think one thing that's a little bit different about Shane than other coaches I've covered in the past is he takes a lot of accountability in specific moments. And when I say that in press conferences a lot, he'll list a mistake or a mishap and say, that's on me, that's a coach's mistake, whatever. So I asked him, how do you fix those mistakes within yourself? Obviously, he's responsible for correcting errors on the field and for his players, but I was like, what's your own process? And I wrote about that actually for a story that came out at like 5 a.m. this morning, I think. But regardless, it's sort of about how do you on the fly adapt and fix those mistakes? Because like you said, like Ole Miss is, it's a talented offense. There's no denying their skills. There's no denying the fact that they're going to put up points on South Carolina regardless. And it's sort of that question of, okay, how is South Carolina going to react to every little thing, both good and bad? Because I do think it's all about staying level-headed, because Ole Miss is going to look for South Carolina to, one, make mistakes, and, two, be rattled by that.
Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News covers the Gamecock Athletic Department, joins us every Thursday at 8 a.m. here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Let's look across, and I think this game, Lulu, does have a lot of emotion to it for South Carolina. I think there's the opportunity to send a message that, hey, that win over Kentucky, that shoulda, coulda, woulda been a win over LSU. That's who we are now. We're not the little brother. We're not the beat down on anymore. We're going to get it done. But I think that message has to be sent against LSU. There's also the emotion of having Juice Wells on the other side. A lot of South Carolina fans feel like Juice Wells took advantage of the Gamecocks after he knew he was going to transfer. A lot of folks felt like he could come back at the end of last year and just elected not to because he knew he was going to transfer. He ends up at Ole Miss, and they make their return to Columbia. Do you feel like there's additional emotion in this game? And if so, is it something South Carolina is going to want to dwell on?
I'll be honest. I do understand if there is additional emotion. However, I also am well aware, based on the players' responses to questions this week, that they're not going to let us know, at least ahead of time, if there's additional emotions. I didn't bring up Juice Wells at all, but other reporters did. And a lot of just simple, like, yeah, he's a good player. Just like Juju McDowell was like, that's my brother. Like, there's little personality, for lack of a better word, kind of given when Juice Wells was brought up. I definitely don't want to give an opinion on that kind of like taking advantage part, just because I wasn't there last year and I haven't looked into much of those dynamics yet to answer that. But I do think that once they potentially see Juice on the field, depending on how much he plays, like that's naturally going to bring out other emotions, regardless. I mean, yes, you in the world of transferring, you face old teammates all the time, but from my understanding, this teammate was a little bit different than others in the past. So I am curious, regardless of how much of a poker face a lot of the players put on now, how that actually plays out when they're on the field.
Lulu Kesson here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. What do you think, Lulu, the right game plan is for this team? Offensive, defensively, do you think there's going to be anything? I know you're getting Lenora Sellers back. That opens up, I think, some of the offense maybe you didn't have under Robbie. Rocket Sanders kind of had his breakout games in the last couple of weeks. I know he's also been nicked up a little bit. Offensively, defensively, do you think there's going to be anything that, any wrinkles that we're going to see out of this team this weekend we haven't seen yet?
I definitely think it will depend a lot on Rocket's health. Obviously, he's listed as questionable in the injury report right now, but that'll be updated because it's an SEC game. The injury report will be public every night until kickoff and updated, but to answer your question, I think that having a developed passing game, which South Carolina, I don't think they necessarily had yet against LSU. So I just imagine that Dowell Loggins and South Carolina will play into that a bit more. You kind of, to be honest, I mean, what do I know? But at the same time, you kind of have to compete with the receivers that Ole Miss has. I mean, obviously, I think probably Sellers runs the ball a little bit more than Jackson Dart does. But regardless, I think South Carolina will probably depend more on its passing game than it did against LSU, especially if Rocket is out. But I do think players like Dylan Stewart and Kyle Kennard kind of have to be huge on defense. I think Dylan he went from breaking through triple team coverage against Kentucky to sort of disappearing because of LSU's O-line, and not saying they lost the game because of that, but South Carolina, I would say their weakest kind of point on defense right now is their secondary, and when you're facing such talented receivers, you can't just let Dart sit in the pocket and have all day to throw to who he wants to. So I think Kennard and Stewart have to be absolutely huge rushing the passer and just giving him a lot of pressure, or else it could be a nightmare on defense.
Those defensive backs, Lulu Kesson, have been challenged. They were challenged by Nussmeier in the LSU game. Obviously, Ole Miss is going to want to take more shots down the field than anybody else. Defensive backs, are they up to the task? Do you think Shane Beamer can lean on them to at least limit the explosive plays from Ole Miss?
I think so. I trust that Beamer is true when he says game experience matters and just playing games is going to help. And obviously you only get 12 and you can't just sit there and hope that, oh, every game you improve. But I think that truly the LSU game and the Kentucky game were enough experience to at least compete against Ole Miss Saturday.
Lulu Kesson covers the South Carolina Gamecocks. She joins us here on Thursdays at 8 a.m. Last one, Lulu, before we let you go. We always end it with this one. South Carolina pulls the upset over the Ole Miss Rebels if blank.
If they're not their own biggest enemy, if they play like the game isn't, out of their own abilities, if they trust themselves, and if Ole Miss isn't so dang angry after losing to Kentucky that they lose some confidence and South Carolina takes advantage.
I agree with that. Let me give you my last thought, and then we'll let you go, Lulu. I've always said teams that get upset, they're way more dangerous the next week. They cover spreads at a ridiculous clip the next week. Here's the thing. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky, but South Carolina's got a little answer to that, in that they got to sit home last week. They got to rest. They got to recoup, get healthy, get back to 100%, and an extra week of game planning. I actually think that kind of negates that edge a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'll quickly say in our work group chat, the second we all saw the final score of Kentucky, we were like, oof, that could be the worst case scenario for South Carolina. And then my mom was like, hey, maybe that makes them lose some confidence. So we'll see. If Ole Miss plays more towards my mom's mentality or mine there, but it's helpful South Carolina got to watch that game, but man, yeah, Ole Miss, they could come out angry on Saturday.
Stellar take. I love it. Spot on. Lulu Kessing covers the Gamecock Athletic Department for the Greenville News. Joins us every Thursday at 8 a.m. Lulu, you are the best. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week, win or lose.
Sure thing. Have a great rest of your week and have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you. Lulu's she's so polite. I love it. You can follow her on X.
We're not really used to polite.
Yeah.
It's just not
most people be like,
do.
Screw you, Rob and Lonzo. I hope your weekend sucks. I hope you don't have power for another month. Not Lulu. At Lulu Kessin.
Don't say that.
L-U-L-U.
Don't speak that into existence.
K-E-S-A-N. I regret it immediately. Abe Gordon from 92.9 The Game in Atlanta joins us next to talk Braves ball, then Rashad Beard at 8:40 to talk Carolina Panthers. 9 o'clock, Hayton Ask Mario, 9:20 Fight Club, and then we're done. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's the Fan Upstate.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 season of the Atlanta Braves comes to its conclusion last night, swept out of the wild card round with a 5-4 loss on the road at the San Diego Padres. There's good and there's bad. The good, the Braves made the playoffs. The good, the San Diego Padres, best team in the second half, a nearly 70% winning percentage down the stretch. The bad news is, the injuries got racked. There were questions about Brian Snicker's methodology at points in the season, et cetera, to discuss all of that and more. Joining us now on the phone lines, a friend of mine, both on the air and off, a legendary voice in the Atlanta sports scene. He is a host and producer on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia. He is Abe Gordon. What's up, big fella?
How you doing, Rob? Yeah, it was a disappointing finish to what was a frustrating season, and now we have all offseason to ask a number of questions about injury returns and Brian Snicker's future and Max Fried and whether or not the team is going to pay. So the season is over, but the questions remain.
Yes, I concur with that. Let's start at the top. Let's start with Snicker. There were points this season that I was very frustrated with Brian Snicker. There were managerial decisions. There were spots where I thought he was leaving guys out there too long. There were spots I thought he was pulling them early. And I think at the end of the day, obviously, Abe, I don't get paid millions of dollars to make day-by-day decisions about this baseball team, and nobody watches it play more than Brian Snicker does. But there were a lot of questions from the fandom about Snit and whether he is still the right guy for the job despite winning a World Series three seasons ago. Is there any jeopardy that Snicker is going to be on any sort of hot seat? Or do you think the Braves are just going to chalk this up to, hey, we were a MASH unit this year. He did the best he could. He got us in. That's good enough.
Yeah, I think the management and front office is understanding of the situation. And the fans can be frustrated if they want. The fans are going to nitpick. I'm going to nitpick. You're going to nitpick. But look, they lost game one against the Mets because Schwellenberger came out in the eighth inning. Guess what? I would have put him back out there in the eighth inning, too. I think we always look at these decisions that maybe we question a little bit and remember the ones that go wrong, but never credit the ones that go right. I think, quite frankly, this is a masterful job to get to the postseason. I mean, every team deals with injuries, but no team has lost the amount of star power, firepower, and front-end talent that the Atlanta Braves did this year. You're talking about Cy Young. You're talking about MVPs. You're talking about multiple-time All-Stars. You're talking about Gold Glovers, all this stuff. So, no. I do not think he's on the hot seat. I think when it comes to Brian Snicker, the question is going to remain. I think he's like 70 years old. I know he's got multiple generations of family now. The question for him is when he wants to step aside. And he came out after the game last night and says he intends to coach next season. He's looking forward already to spring training, and he's ready to gear up and go again. So that seems to be what the plan is. That being said, I did have some wonderment about 2022 and National League Manager of the Year Skip Schumacher, who did step away from the Miami Marlins. And if there was a world in which Brian Snitker decided to step away onto his own, I think Schumacher would be pretty high up on the list. But Snitker pretty much came out last night after the loss, after the elimination, and said, I'm going to be back. And so that's what I expect.
We are talking with Abe Gordon from 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia. Let's talk about this series a little bit. Mention it, disappointing, sweep, mercy killing of the season. You had some issues, man. You came into it because of that doubleheader and the injury to Chris Sale. You kind of had to shuffle up the pitching just a little bit. Max Fried last night, nowhere near what we're used to with Max Fried. But to me, the problem was more at the dish. 23 strikeouts, one walk across two games for this Braves team. Just you can say lack of plate discipline. Felt to me more like the Braves knew they were in a bit of a hole, maybe pushed themselves a little bit, maybe overextended at the dish. What would you say was the biggest problem in the series that cost the Braves a sweep?
Yeah, I think it was the Tigers, maybe, manager who spoke to his team before their AL wildcard series and says, hey, just go out there and do your jobs. We don't need anyone to step up and be a hero. And it kind of felt like the Braves were desperately trying the inverse of that, where everyone was trying to step up and be a hero. And with the exception of Michael Harris, who kind of would have been the hero if the Braves were able to muster anything else, because he was red hot in the two-game series. That's what it felt like to me. We saw the comments from Eddie Perez to Marcelo Zuna against the Mets in game two of that doubleheader to say, hey, the team needs you. Don't think about yourself right now. It kind of felt like that's what the plate approach was, is, oh, it's my opportunity to put my stamp on the Braves postseason. Let me see if I can hit a home run. And then obviously with what Michael King had working on Tuesday night, because he was outstanding, that plate approach did not mesh. So, but I mean, come on, Rob, like, how apropos is it that in a season marred by injuries, Max Fried's potential final start gets marred by a comebacker that hits him in the hip and obviously dealt with some discomfort after that? He worked his way out of the inning, but he was never going to be himself after that. I think he spoke to the manager and pitching coach after he gets hit and tells him, hey, this thing's bothering me. And that's why you saw him pulled at the time he was. Of course, in a season that had been full of injuries, both at the plate and on the mound, one more to essentially, twist the knife in Braves fans' collective hearts.
The injury bug, we talked about that a little bit in the show. You brought it up there, Abe Gordon. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that would be the one thing that will be discussed about this Braves season so far this year, is just riddled by injuries this year. You had Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna go down for the season. And basically the way I put it is everybody who wasn't Matt Olson and Marcelo Zuna spent extended time on the IL. There's not much you can do about it. You can talk about training staffs and you can talk about the medical protocols of the team and all that. I've done that with my New Orleans Pelicans for years now, and we just keep going back to the well for it. But do you think that is something that the Braves leave behind in 2024 and maybe are a healthier team in 2025? Is there something more to that, or is it just, hey, you had a bad luck season?
Well, the injuries are just bad luck. I don't think there's anything they did wrong in treatment and preparation, all that stuff. That's just going to happen. But I also don't want to cover up like this side narrative and say everything was injury related. There were a lot of guys who before their injuries were not playing up to par. You look at Michael Harris, and he got red hot when he came back. And so, it's convenient to say if he had been here the whole year. He was there for a good portion of the year, and he wasn't very good. Same thing with Austin Riley. Same thing with a number of guys. Acuna was off to a slow start. So I don't want to lean like super heavy on the injury bug. Certainly that played a role. And over the course of the season, maybe guys do get better. Like we saw Michael Harris come back and look better. But it also wasn't just the injuries. There were some issues throughout the course of the season and guys that you count on to perform who weren't performing. I mean, Orlando Arcia, you know, I don't know what his future is, but this was a guy that was an all-star. You paid him and you got him on a great deal, but he was an all-star. And coming back this year, you were expecting another sort of performance like that, and you didn't get it. And like I said, Riley was not great. Harris was not great. Ozzy was just average. And so it's more than just the injuries, but what the injuries did was deprive you of the opportunity to turn it around before the postseason. And I think that's what we're left with frustrating, especially because you go to the bump, you go to the starting pitching, and you're like, man, and even in this moment, injuries dealt with it with Chris Sale not being able to go with the back issues. Because, like, if you're telling me that I got Chris Sale, Max Fried, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Ronaldo Lopez in a seven-game series, like, I don't care who's struggling at the plate. You have a chance. But that was taken away. And that's, again, of course, not even counting Spencer Strider coming back next year. So there's no doubt that the injuries are going to leave a lasting legacy. It is kind of what you're stuck on. It is kind of what you lean on as an excuse. But that's not to say if guys were healthy all year, they wouldn't been any different.
We're talking to Abe Gordon. Last one, Abe, we'll let you go. I know there is a decision to be made if Max Fried is in any way interested in staying on Max Fried. A couple other guys that are going to have contracts coming up. Nuts and bolts, one-minute answer. What's the offseason look like for the Atlanta Braves?
I think you try and find an upgrade at shortstop, whether that's internal or external. I don't think you can play Orlando Arcia again. He was an absolute disaster at the plate. And there becomes a point where the defense just doesn't make up for it. I think we reached that point this year. So I would look for an upgrade at shortstop if possible. I'm still optimistic, Rob. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I know I was optimistic about Freddie. Didn't happen. I was less optimistic or even really caring about Dansby, and he's also gone. But for some reason, I'm optimistic they're going to find a way to pony up for Max Fried. So we'll see how that one goes. But look, Freed's going to get offers. There's no doubt about that. So I think you retain Brian Snitker. You work towards getting Strider and Acuna back for opening day. You upgrade at shortstop. You try and figure out what's going on in left field. And then hopefully you can bring back Max Fried. I think that's the plan.
Abe Gordon, host and producer on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia. You can follow him on X at Abe Gordon, a gentleman, a scholar, and a hell of a guy. Abe, you're the best. Thank you, big dog. Let's do it again maybe mid-season or mid-off-season because it's the off-season now, buddy.
Yeah, oh, it's tough to say already, but I appreciate the time as always. I just want to say best wishes and fingers crossed. We're thinking about everyone affected by Helene. We got very lucky here in Atlanta that it slid a little bit elsewhere, but obviously you guys bore the brunt of it, and we're doing a lot here at Odyssey Atlanta to help some people out, and I'm sure just everyone keep the faith, keep the hope up, stay optimistic, and we'll all get through this together as humans.
You're a good man, Abe Gordon. Thank you very much. Abe Gordon from 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. When we come back, Rashad Beard from the Panther Nation podcast. We talk a little Carolina Panther football next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan Upstate on Thursdays at 8:40 in the a.m. portion of the day. We take a trip up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and speak to our next guest. He is one half of the Panther Nation podcast. When I tell you it is your source for talk about the Carolina Panthers, I'm being deadly serious. Rashad sees me pop up in the stream every time he does a stream. Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, joins us here on the show. What's up, big dog?
What's going on, guys? All is well over here.
I'm glad to hear it, man. Glad to hear it.
Can we get this out of the way? I mean, you're already getting comments on the jersey.
Ronzo made the assumption that you were going to come in here and put me on blast for rocking the sleeveless Bel Air Academy basketball jersey today. And I thought, no, Rashad's going to think this jersey is fire.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the Bel Air jersey. I love the throwback. I like it. It's nothing wrong with it.
Not talk about the jersey.
It is the fact that
I'm talking about the guns underneath.
What's under the jersey? Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna judge.
I'll tell you, all right? I obviously, before Helene came through, I was in the gym every day and I was jacked. But I got no power,
obviously.
I turned into the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Swole
got turned off. All right, let's talk some Panther football, and let's start with the big news from the week. Shaq, done for the year, shut down with an injury after the L last weekend to Cincinnati. Rashad Beard, you know, like on one hand, I guess this is a point where you're like, I'm glad we kind of had low expectations or else this would feel like a big blow. On the flip side, as even Dave Canales said yesterday talking about Deontay, which we'll come to here in just a minute, it is a development year. It is a year that you wanted to kind of have everybody moving in the right direction, upward trajectory, and losing a leader like Shaq is a big blow. What's this mean for Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously next man up. Fortunately, we did draft a linebacker, Trevon Wallace, who has is going to get some opportunity to lead that defense. But yeah, for Shaq as an individual, man, it's tough. He had a season-ending injury earlier last year, too. And so, man, the injuries are mounting up, and it's unfortunate for Shaq Thompson. And I hope he, you know, gets well soon. I know a lot of the conversation on X has been around, you know, the turf, and I don't know how. Again, I'm not a doctor, never claimed to be, nor will ever be one. But you know, a lot of people are talking about the turf and how that, you know, how that's impacting all the injuries and how we should go back to natural grass. And Shaq Thompson was one of the guys that was very, very vocal about, you know, playing on grass. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it. And would that impact us or impact Tepper in making a decision to go back to natural grass? Obviously, it's a financial move and he's a businessman. But at the end of the day, man, you got guys going down and we got to do a study. Something's got to be done about these injuries because they're mounting up. You know, Derrick Brown, we lost for in the defense. Is just, I mean, it is what it is, man. You got to step up. But a lot of injuries that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, for sure. And the grass discussion is interesting because it's not just happening with active players. I know the Kelce brothers have talked about it on their podcast. I think Mike Irvin talked about it on his podcast. I think Ocho Cinco talked about it on his podcast. Like I've heard it being discussed. So if this ends up being connected to it, and I'm sure Shaq is well, I don't want to assume. I would think Shaq may, if he believes it was turf connected, we're going to hear about that because of what you said. He has been vocal about it. But, you know, like you said, he is a businessman. At the end of the day, it's not just the Panthers that play there. He's got the soccer team he's got to consider, as well as all the other events that run through that venue. So we'll find out. Speaking of that Deontay Johnson story, right? Kansas City loses Rashee Rice. Adam Schefter the next day is like, hey, Deontay, Adam Thielen could both be on the table. Deontay has said already that he is focused on the Panthers, and the reports are that he said within his circle that he actually hopes to be extended by the Panthers and stay in Charlotte, which makes sense, right? Like they rolled the dice on this cat. They said, you're our number one. We want to make you a number one. A lot of teams, I think, would try to make Deontay a number two wide receiver, but Dave Canales came out yesterday, said, hey, look, we're focused on development. He's a big part of the offense. I don't see that trade happening. Where do you think we stand on all of that?
Yeah, I certainly hope we don't trade Deontay Johnson. He's been a breath of fresh air. We haven't had a wide receiver of his stature since DJ Moore, and we obviously traded DJ Moore away, leaving us with literally no weapons. So Deontay has been, over these past couple of games, when he's had Andy Dalton throwing to him, it has been very, very good. I mean, he's got a lot of yards. I see averaging probably just over 100 yards per game. Got a couple touchdowns. He's playing well. He's exactly what we expect. A couple of drops last game, but they were tough catches. But, you know, obviously, you know, we'll hope to see some improvement there. But, man, I mean, for a team that has not had a number one wide receiver here in a long time, Deontay Johnson is definitely a breath of fresh air. And we got to kind of start getting away from letting all our good guys walk. You got to start to develop something and keeping those guys around. So, Deontay, I hope he stays. Again, really good wide receiver, and I hope he stays around for sure.
I would say the same thing. In fact, if anything, I'd say if there's a receiver getting moved, it's probably Adam Thielen. I think Thielen,
right,
last year, the contract, I think a dude that, while as talented as he is, he's a slot receiver. I would say, respectfully, because I like Adam Thielen a lot, a little bit more replaceable than Deontay Johnson is, at least where you stand right now.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Adam Thielen, especially at his age, getting a little bit older. We want to ship him off to a contender, let him kind of sail off to paradise with a ring somewhere. So let's, I mean, if we're going to trade anybody, I would do Adam Thielen a favor. And obviously, we talk about Xavier Legette. He's definitely stepped up in Adam Thielen's absence. So certainly didn't really miss Thielen much. Obviously, there's a couple situations where we had some drops by Mingo, a couple drops by XL. Probably would not have been dropped by Adam Thielen, but those guys are going to continue to develop, and I think we're going to be okay moving forward.
So, obviously, the big conversation now, Bryce Young takes a back seat. In comes the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton. He gets a win in week one, very competitive against the Bengals in week two. We had the conversation earlier this week, and I'll kind of leave this one open-ended for you to address however you want, Rashad. I've said already, Bryce Young looks bad. Andy Dalton came in, showed at least a little bit more what looks possible with a quarterback who understands. Yes, it is on Bryce Young to develop and get better. I've also said when I look at Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, some of these other guys, I think you have to put some of, not all, let me be clear, not all, but some of the blame of the failure of development of Bryce Young on the Carolina Panthers as well. It's just an ugly situation. A, do we see Bryce Young back on the field again this year for the Carolina Panthers? And B, do you have any belief in all the discussion going around that Bryce Young might be on the trading block if Dave Canales really does want to say, this ain't my guy?
Man, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to be honest. This is why I came on the show prior to Andy Dalton starting and said I didn't think it would happen. I was certainly wrong because later that day, they announced that they were going to start. It was literally the same day. So this is why I question that, right? If you think of it from a long-term perspective, it doesn't make much sense because if this is so quote unquote a development year, as you say, then why not let Bryce Young kind of just play it out? But I also get it in that you got a team to keep happy, right? Those, you got mouths to feed. Deontay Johnson, those receivers, those offensive linemen are taking a lot of blame for Bryce Young's play, right? Our whole supporting staff, supporting cast for offensive linemen and wide receivers taking all the blame, right? We don't have an offensive line. We don't have a wide receiver. Wide receivers aren't getting separation. And clearly that was not the case, right? We have one of the top, probably a top three offensive line in the NFL. So it's not an offensive line issue. We have weapons. Deontay Johnson's playing. You know what I mean? These guys are playing well. So it's not an issue with talent. We have talent. So Bryce Young definitely he regressed under Canales, which is not expected. I don't know what we're going to do moving forward. I don't see any circumstance where Bryce Young gets the position back unless there's an injury to Andy Dalton. And so it's just unfortunate. I don't know where we go. I don't see him getting traded either. I just think he kind of sticks around.
Yeah, I said the same thing. I was watching your stream that day in the chat, and I had said earlier in that morning on my show as well, like, it to me, if this is a development year, sitting Bryce Young doesn't make sense unless, and even if you do want to trade him, like, why would you not put him out there and unless you truly believe he's just bad and you're trying to hide him until you can ship him off somewhere else, it doesn't make sense to me because, and you said this, I had already said it on the show, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, if you go out there and win three games, all you're doing is costing yourself a draft pick. And if Bryce Young's not your guy, you're going QB1, even if it is a thin draft class at QB, which I think we both agree that it is this year. If you're going quarterback, I want to be as high as possible. So playing Andy Dalton and picking up two or three wins, I don't understand what it helps. Even though you got a win and you were competitive against Cincinnati, I don't think you're making a run for a division. You're like plus 3,200 to win it, even with the performance the last couple of weeks. Even though you looked more competitive, like, my immediate response was, yay, so what?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I got to be honest, though. It does feel good to be somewhat competitive. I can tell you this, just the energy in the stadium was much better. Even throughout that game, we were down two touchdowns. But, man, it felt like we were in the game. So that feeling, I got to be honest, that feeling is good. But when you look at the future, like you're saying, it doesn't make much sense. And maybe there's a scenario where we continue to go with veteran quarterbacks. You brought up Baker Mayfield and Geno and these guys. Maybe the Canales magic only works with veterans. Maybe he can't develop rookies. So we don't know that. I have no idea. Maybe in the future we continue to go with the veteran quarterback route. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I'm in wait and see mode. I don't have any reason to doubt the Canales way and the Dan Morgan way just yet. We're waiting to see. But as of right now, you know, I think Andy Dalton is the right choice. You know, if we're talking about trying to win games right now, Andy Dalton is the right choice. He gives us an opportunity. He's going to keep us in the games. He's going to at least make the offense look respectable. And that's all we can ask for right now. You know what I mean? That's all I got.
I think you also mentioned something that was exciting to see was they were happy and they were having fun. On the sidelines and out on the field, I mean, that's something that hasn't been there for the Panthers in a while.
Yeah, the energy wasn't just different in the stands. It was different on the sideline, too.
Completely different. Yeah, completely different. I mean, I've never seen so many Panthers fans in my section. So I know Andy Dalton at least brought that to the table, right? There's something. There's a little bit of hope, and you can see it. The energy is everywhere. It's up everywhere. The locker room. There's a complete shift in the energy levels on both sides,
also,
of the stands and in the locker room.
Bad news for everybody who didn't buy tickets early. Ticket prices are going up now. You had that chance to get them while they were cheap,
right?
Oh no, they're more than that.
They're $5. I do want to. I like giving credit where credit is due. I got it. This is a good take. Made Four More in the chat said Canales needed to show that his scheme actually works, and it was a personnel issue. That's pretty good. Cool Kev came in and said the same thing. Now you can evaluate the talent around the quarterback with Andy. And that actually, I actually like that take, Rashad. Like, to me, with Bryce Young in development mode, you did kind of have to scale back a little bit. Now with Andy Dalton, even if he's not as good as having a Pro Bowl quarterback is going to be, it allows Canales to really show that offense and his scheme is capable. And in 2 weeks, it certainly has looked that way. I think that's a really good take.
Yeah, I agree with it. I mean, it's the proof is in the pudding, right? Everybody's looking. The offensive line has been playing well, and they were getting a lot of flack. You know, they were getting a lot of flack for these sacks that they were quote unquote giving up when they, in all reality, they weren't. It's just Bryce Young was holding on to the football too long, and it didn't have the pocket presence to step up and make a throw. So Andy Dalton is making concise decisions with the football, and the scheme is working. I would agree with that take wholeheartedly. Yep.
Rashad Beard from the Panther Nation podcast joins us every single Thursday, pardon me, at 8:40 to talk Carolina Panther football with us. Rashad, what do as we get set up for this weekend, what do we want to see out of Carolina this weekend on the road at Chicago? You got DJ Moore over there. You got Caleb Williams, the guy that was used with the Bryce Young pick. There's a little, I don't think it matters in the grand scheme of things, but a little emotional investment in this game. What are we thinking?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a big game for Bryce Young. This was supposed to be the game that Bryce Young was supposed to show, hey, man, the Panthers got it right. They traded for me, and all the assets that went to the Chicago Bears, man, that doesn't matter. I'm still the guy. This was supposed to be that game. Unfortunately, a little bit of, you know, luster has been taken away from that. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to see the defense step up. You know, the defense has lost some guys. You want to see Trevon Wallace take that step, become that middle linebacker of the future, right? The cornerbacks are going to be tested. The wide receivers of the Chicago Bears are really talented. And, you know, DJ Moore is always going to be looking to get that get back for his former team in the Carolina Panthers. So it's going to be a good game. Just all eyes are on the defense. We've seen the offense progress. I trust the offense. Chuba Hubbard's playing well. Deontay Johnson's playing well. I don't see too many situations where it's going to be a complete shootout. I think we can slow down Caleb Williams in that offense. I think we're going to be fine. I think this is certainly a winnable game. I think every game is going to be at least competitive with Andy Dalton at the helm.
Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast. You can follow them on X at Panther Nation PC. More importantly, go to their YouTube channel, Panther Nation Podcast. Click that subscribe button. Hit that little alarm bell because Rashad goes live all the damn time. Big Dog, appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Yep, appreciate you guys, man. Always fun.
My pleasure. Rashad Beard from the Panther Nation podcast, Hating Ass Mario from the BetQL Network, joins us in the next segment to talk about the rest of the storylines around the NFL Network. That is all after Lonzo seduces you with this sports flash.
Got to admit, it's hard because my pictures was just
our
on the window.
Our faces are on the building.
Yeah, this is weird. The season is over for the Atlanta Braves, who were swept out of the wild card round after a 5-4 defeat last night. Max Fried was yanked after just two innings, surrendering 8 hits and all 5 runs through 6 outs. Michael Harris, the second, had a 2-run homer in the 8th to bring the Braves within 1. But we're unable to finish the job in the 9th. Atlanta finishes with an 89-73 record. In other Major League Baseball playoff games, the Detroit Tigers swept the Houston Astros 5-2. The Kansas City Royals knocked off the Baltimore Orioles 2-1. That'll make the boss happy. And the Milwaukee Brewers completed a comeback win over the Mets 5-3 to force the only deciding Game 3 tonight. Tune in to Saturday at 12:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Citadel Bulldogs. It's Furman versus Citadel right here on your home for Paladins football. The Fan, Upstate.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.